Hello and welcome to the series on F-Sharp, where we're going over concepts to help you get started build your own F-Sharp applications. In this video, we're going to be taking a look at how you can group or aggregate data into more complex types. For example, let's say that you were trying to model or were trying to represent a customer. Some data that may belong to that customer are things like their mailing address or their preferred payment method or their purchase history. So we're going to be taking a look at how with types like tuples and records and discriminated unions, you can build these more complex types from primitive and simpler types like strings and integers. Now, I want to remind you that any code that you see in this video can be found at aka.ms/fsharp-101-samples. With that, let's get started. The first step we're going to be taking a look at are tuples. Tuples provide a way to group unnamed values in order. Tuples can contain a variety of data types. So as opposed to, say, an integer, which has to be numeric, or a string that has to be text, with tuples, you can have the first element be a string and perhaps the second element be an integer, and that is perfectly acceptable. Let's take a look at some code and see tuples in action. Tuples are often enclosed in parentheses. Each of the elements is separated by a comma. If you take a look at the type signature, you can see the data types of the individual elements separated by an asterisk. As I mentioned earlier, you can have tuples that hold different data types. In this case, I have the first element, which represents the name of a GitHub repository, followed by the number of stars. Because tuples are in order, you're able to extract the values using the FST and SND functions. As the name suggests, the FST function gets the first element and the SND function gets the second. Another way to extract elements of a tuple is by binding them to values. If we were to print out the values here, you're going to see that each of the elements, both the project name as well as the star, is printed out to the console. If you have no use for one of the elements, you can just discard it or ignore it using the underscore. Now, one thing that I like to call out is that in these examples, I'm working with pairs or tuples that only have two elements. However, you can have as many elements as you want inside of a tuple. As we just saw, tuples are a really great way to group and aggregate data when working with unnamed values. Now, because we're working with unnamed values, that means that sometimes trying to understand the context of what the data is referencing can become a little bit difficult, especially as your data grows. So for example, sometimes it can be difficult to tell apart whether a tuple is trying to reference geographic coordinates or whether it's referring to the square footage of a home. For cases like that, you may want to consider working with records. Records, like tuples, are a type that allows you to group and aggregate data. However, as opposed to tuples, with records, you're working with named values. That means that you're able to bind your values to a name and therefore have a little bit more confidence, a little bit more context of what it is that your data is trying to reference. As an added benefit, you can also add members to records. Let's take a look at what records look like in action. You can define a record by using the type keyword. The record labels or properties along with their types are defined inside of these curly braces. In this example, this record is defining a GitHub project and has a project name and stars labels. To create a record, you can do so by using a record expression. Record expressions are enclosed by curly braces and they bind values to record labels. Notice that without me explicitly saying that this is a GitHub project record, the compiler is at work, and using type inference, it's able to determine the correct type. To access data in a record, you can just use dot notation. So for example, if I want to access the project name, I can just say fsharp.projectname. I can do the same for stars. It's important to remember that data in fsharp is immutable by default. Therefore, to update a record, you make a copy of the original, and using the with keyword, you update the desired labels with new data. As we can see from this example, we updated stars to 2801, and when we print it out, you can see that the new value is shown here. To work with members, use the member keyword after the record definition. In cases where you want to access data of a record label, you can use an identifier such as this. However, you're not restricted to it, and you can use anything you want. As you can see from the get code owner example, since I don't need to access data in any of the labels, I can just use the underscore to make that clear that I'm not going to be using any of the records label data. To access the members in a record, I can just use that notation as well. So if we run get URL, you can see that it's going to get the URL, just like it's defined here. And if we run get code owner, you can see that .NET is the value that we get here. The last step we're going to be looking at are discriminator unions. Discriminator unions can group data by providing support for named cases, or each of these cases can have a different value or a different type. Discriminator unions are really great for representing object hierarchies. Let's take a look at what discriminator unions look like. Discriminator unions provide support for named cases, and they can represent object hierarchies. Let's take a look at this example here. Let's say that I want to define a record type for a GitHub project, which has project name, stars, and state labels. Now, let's say that the state label has a type of string. And what I mean by state is it archived? Is it active? What's the state of the project? Now, notice that when the type is string, any valid string will work as a value for state. Now, that's not always going to be accurate. So let's take a look at how discriminator unions can help us with that. To define a discriminator union, you can use a type keyword. Then you can list each of the named cases prefixed by this vertical bar here. Now, you're going to notice here that I have archived and active as my named cases. In the case of archived, I don't really want much information beyond the fact that a project is archived. But if it's active, I like to know the maintainer's name. Now, in this case, I'm providing some type information, and I'm using an anonymous record to define the type. Now, an anonymous record, as the name suggests, it's a record that is not defined by the type keyword. Now, one of the benefits is I can still define it and use it. However, I don't have to create another type inside of my application. Now, once I define my discriminator union, I can go ahead and use it. In this case, I'm going to create a record type called GitHub project, which again has that project name, stars, and state labels. But notice now that the state type is that discriminator union project state. Therefore, it can either be archived or it can be active. And if it's active, I'll provide that maintainer information. Let's take a look at how you can use discriminator unions. Now, in this case, what I've done is I created a project and given it string information, just like I did in the original example. Now, you're going to notice here that there's these red squigglies here, and that means that there's an error here. The compiler is noticing an error, and that's because I provided a string, but it's expecting a project state. If we go ahead and run this here to define our types, and then we're to run this, you'll see that there's an error, and again, it tells us it's expecting a project state. On the other hand, if we go ahead and do this here, on an archive project, you're going to see that it creates a record successfully. And then if we do this on an active project, where we're saying that it's active and we're providing that type, that information about the maintainer, right, we're able to create that record successfully. Now, in this video, we're not really going to go into detail as to how you can use these discriminator unions with pattern matching. However, in a later video, we're going to show how pattern matching paired with discriminator unions can be a powerful tool for handling behavior and handling cases within your application. In this video, we took a look at how you can use types like tuples, records, and discriminator unions to group and aggregate data to build more complex types. In the next video, we're going to take a look at how you can use classes and interfaces for object programming. See you then.